This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Hey, welcome to the Todd Albaugh Show. Todd's off today. He'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild here, subbing in along with my favorite co-guest host, Angela Lang, the executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, thanks for being with me these next couple hours.
Of course. Always happy to be here.
Yeah, it's always fun when you are. We got a great show for everybody. In the second half hour, Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers will join us. And then at 1:06, Wisconsin's new poet laureate Brenda Cardenas is coming on. And then in the last half hour, Civic Media's own meteorologist Brittany Merlot will join us to talk about the deep freeze coming this weekend and about birds, snowy owls, and other winter birds in Wisconsin, because, you know, I can't go a show without talking about bird watching in Wisconsin. So it's going to be fun. And you can join the conversation anytime by calling or texting 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Well, Angela, it's been quite a week. How are you doing?
You know, I'm getting over a round of COVID, and I've never had that before. Yeah. Thank goodness everything is fine. I'm very grateful that I was able to work from home, and I had what I think was a relatively mild case, but that wasn't fun. But overall, it's been a wild week. Biden's final address, confirmation hearings, and yeah, what a week to try to come back to the office from winter break.
You never had COVID before, huh?
I know. Somebody said, they were like, you're one of the unicorn people that never had it. And I was like, no, I do. I may have had it in like December of 2019, because I was like really sick at a conference one time. But no, other than that, I've been very careful. And every time I've been sick, I've been, you know, always testing and it's negative. So finally got me after almost 5 years.
Finally got that second pink line, huh?
Yep. I had to take two. I was like, wait a minute. Really?
It's not a welcome sight. It's kind of like seeing the red and blue behind you in the police car. So, you know, you don't want to get that. And so what were your symptoms? Did you have the night sweats and all that?
I did. Yeah. I had some body aches and some chills, but it mostly just felt like a cold, a cough, stuffy nose. Definitely have had worse scenarios. So I'm very grateful. And also shout out to the BLOC team. They're like, you're coming back next week, right? And I was like, well, you know, if I'm negative, and they're like, just come back next week. So they've been very supportive. It's been good. I've been able to kind of work from home and take a nap in between meetings, which has been nice too.
Well, I'm glad you didn't have a serious case of it, because it can be. I've had it twice, and neither time was a lot of fun. And the first time I had a rebound case of it, and so I was out essentially for 2 weeks. But I've missed it this time around, so I'm hoping I will continue that streak, but I probably shouldn't mention it. Not that I'm superstitious or anything, but I'm knocking on wood.
Knock on wood.
There you go. So let's talk politics a little bit. We had the hearings this week. What do you make of Pete Hegseth's hearing?
I mean, what was interesting is that the things that he chose to deny, the fact that he said that they were, a lot of questions were anonymous smear campaigns in regards to his level of drinking, him going to strip clubs and things like that. It's very telling when you're just like, oh, that was just an anonymous smear campaign. But like, you didn't deny it, though. Like, you should have just denied it outright. So
right. And they were, you know, yes or no questions. And he wouldn't answer yes or no. He would just say anonymous smears. He must have said it 20 times.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us, when we saw it, because, you know, he denied some things, which was interesting, because if you're going to use that tactic, I would have done it for everything. Because now there's some things you denied and some things you're like, oh, that was just a smear campaign. Well, you denied other things. Why are you choosing not to deny this?
I can't think of someone less qualified for this job. I mean, here is a guy who's an alleged rapist. He's admitted to having a drinking problem, at least in his past. and said he was going to give up drinking if he got this job, which has to be a classic for people who've had drinking problems. That must resonate at the AA meetings. He's never run a business of any size, and he's now going to, you know, run the Pentagon. I mean, that he's just not. He's not qualified for it, but, you know, there's one thing that hasn't gotten enough attention that really disturbs me, and that is his defense of some very unsavory soldiers who were accused of heinous crimes. There was one guy, Navy SEAL Edward Gallagher, who allegedly stabbed a teenage detainee in the throat to death, and Gallagher was sending texts around saying, "Got him with my hunting knife," and then he took a picture of himself with the corpse, which he was court-martialed for and convicted of that, not of killing the person, but of taking a photo with a corpse. And then what we had was Hegseth was urging Trump to pardon him, essentially, and Trump went ahead and then did it. Even though the guys who were working with this Gallagher, at least two of them, quoted in the New York Times, two Navy SEALs by name. One guy said, "This guy is freaking evil." And another guy said the guy was toxic. And yet this is a guy Pete Hegseth championed. And he talks about the warrior culture. He doesn't believe that soldiers should be held to the Geneva Conventions. And he's going to be running our Pentagon. I mean, this is the, see, there's this sadistic streak in Trump land, which really concerns me. Trump himself talking about, you know, beat people up, you know, at his rallies if they're heckling him, or the police should, you know, use a little more force when they're throwing someone into the back of the patrol car. This goes hand in hand with that. And I think it's one of the reasons Trump actually likes the guy.
Probably.
And so for me, all these confirmation hearings, you know, Trump's in charge. Trump's going to do what he wants. And it doesn't really matter that much who the sycophants are, and they're all going to be sycophants. This idea that they're not going to tell the president something he doesn't want to hear is a joke. I mean, the only reason they're there is because he knows they're going to tell him what he wants to hear. But this idea of having the head of the Pentagon kind of saying Geneva Conventions, we shouldn't have to abide by it. It's too tough for the foot soldiers to know what to do. That's sending all the wrong signals, it seems to me. Given the kind of scandals we've seen from My Lai to Abu Ghraib, I mean, it's just going to invite more. And I don't think the Democrats said enough about that at the hearings. A couple of the senators waved at it, but they didn't really drive it home in a way that people could understand. You really had to know the background of the story of Gallagher and a couple of the other guys accused of serious human rights abuses or war crimes to know what was going on. And Hegseth doesn't want U.S. soldiers to be held to any war crime standards. So that's who we got. And it looks like he's going to sail through, too. Unbelievably.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, going back to another point, too, and I think tying this all together is, you know, what do we want to be as like a country? Because one of the questions that he was asked, because, you know, Trump had said, maybe you just shoot the protesters in the leg, you know, to get them to calm down. And he was point blank asked, would you carry out an order like that? And he's like, oh, I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals. And then he just continued to talk over. And I think that's something that we as Americans should be very, very concerned about, that he did not deny that he would carry out an order like that. And given all of his background and the people that he's buddies with, I think that it is incredibly dangerous in this country, especially for anyone that wants to push back or speak out against the status quo.
And remember, Trump was saying that about Black Lives Matter protesters. That's who he wanted. He wanted the military to go shoot people in the knees if they were protesting civil rights abuses by police officers who were killing people in our streets. And the weird thing both about Hegseth and Bondi, neither of them would comment on outrageous statements that Trump made. Just mentioned that one by Hegseth. And then we had Pam Bondi, who she wanted to comment on Trump asking Raffensperger in Georgia for 11,780 votes. She said she'd never heard it, never heard the tape. It's just, that can't be true. Everyone in America, especially those of us who are interested in politics, heard that many times and certainly read a whole bunch of news stories about it. So, and then she denied ever hearing that Trump called the January 6th insurrectionists patriots. I mean, that's a level of trying to take the American people as just being stupid.
It's gaslighting.
Yeah, it's gaslighting. It's, you know, how dumb do you think we are? You know, that's what I wanted to say.
We saw these things, and that's why I tell people all the time, it is so important that we are amplifying voices of people on the ground, whether it's, you know, Block, shameless plug, or like other organizations, because we have people that think January 6th was the school group, you know, like, and we are actively seeing the whitewashing and the gaslighting of history in real time. And I think it's on all of us to make sure that we're setting that straight, because how could you... You know, it's one thing to say, oh, I just didn't see it. Well, great. You're lying. You're thinking we're dumb, or you just didn't come prepared to your own hearing. Like, which is it? Because none of it is good.
Yeah. I mean, it is George Orwell right before our eyes. They are just totally rewriting history. We all watched January 6th happen live on TV as it was coming down. And now they're telling us it wasn't that way, that these were patriots. And we'll see how many of them, of the insurrectionists, of the traitors, that Trump actually pardons on day one. I think Monday, I'm not going to watch the inauguration. I'll read the speech later. The inauguration, you know, I don't want to waste an hour or 2 hours of my time when I can read his inaugural address in 5 or 10 minutes. So, and I'm with Michelle Obama. What was your reaction to that? Michelle Obama decided not to go.
I will say that I immediately was concerned because I know she wasn't at Carter's funeral as well. And I was like, I hope everything's okay, you know, and there's not something going on. And people are like, no, she probably just doesn't want to go. And I was like, oh, okay, well then more power to her. Like, why are we endorsing some of these things? Like, I think showing up, and I understand that there's some elected officials and, you know, Rep. Jim Clyburn said that he's going to be there because he's representing his district. So I do think that there's a balance, but I do believe that Congresswoman Gwen Moore said that she wasn't going to go. And, you know, I applaud folks who say that they're not going to go because they don't want to validate it, or because it is also MLK Day and people would rather do acts of service as kind of a day on something else on that day than actually attend that man's inauguration.
Yeah, I just think Michelle Obama has such a Trump allergy that she can't gonna be near him. And I don't blame her 1 minute for that.
Not at all.
And so, I'm interested in what the viewers think, whether they're going to be watching, the listeners here are going to be watching the inauguration or not. Give us a text. Here's a text we had from Andrew from Maine about Hegseth with a history of drinking and alleged sexual assault. Hegseth sounds very much like someone enlisted in the U.S. military. Well, that's pretty much a broad generalization. I wouldn't abide by that. He would say, I would like to think officers would be better, but the prevalence of the term military sexual trauma tells me otherwise. I mean, that is a real serious issue. Military sexual trauma. We'll be right back on the Todd Albo Show. I'm talking with Angela Lang, my co-host. You can join the conversation or text 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Albo Show. Todd's off today, and he'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in. I'm joined by my co-host, Angela Lang, the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Let's talk a little bit about Biden. This is his last couple days in office. He's been doing a lot this week. Yesterday, he decided to commute the sentences of 2,500 nonviolent drug offenders. Let me just give a little background here from the New York Times. President Biden announced on Friday that he'd commute the sentences of nearly, I guess he did it today, of 2,500 inmates serving long prison terms for nonviolent drug offenses, the broadest commutation of individual sentences ever issued by a U.S. president. These are for offenders who received harsher sentences for drug crimes than they would under current practices. And it was a move aimed at reversing longstanding criminal justice disparities, Biden said. So, you know, this is an issue that's been big, that, you know, the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine thing in the 80s and 90s and during the war on crime. a war on drugs. So this was a really good thing you did, didn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, for those that don't know, myself and Block have been, you know, critical of Biden considering the 94 crime bill when he was a senator. He was the author of that. And our office is in 53206. And that is one of the most incarcerated zip codes in the world because the United States incarcerates the most people. And we see how that disproportionately impacts Black and Brown folks. Like, there's very few people. I don't even think I can find anyone that hasn't been touched by the criminal justice system, whether personally or their friends and family. And we also know that a lot of these are disparities around drug crimes. Now that marijuana has started to become legalized in various states, we have still people being locked up for things that are illegal just in another state. And I think that this was long overdue. And I applaud Biden for understanding and trying to undo some of the harm that he did over, 30 years ago when he was a senator.
Yeah, I think he was expressing remorse, either explicitly or implicitly, for his role there. And here's a quote from him that echoes what you were saying, Angela. "This action," said Biden, "is an important step toward righting historical wrongs, correcting sentencing disparities, and providing deserving individuals the opportunity to return to their families and communities after spending far too much time behind bars." This has been a reform that a lot of people have been advocating for. I know you and your organization has been, as well as other prisoner rights groups here in Wisconsin, Expo and Wisdom, and the ACLU and a whole bunch of other good groups have been fighting on this front. And it's good that there's a little bit of progress there. So I think, it's just another example that, Biden, and he admitted this last night on Lawrence O'Donnell, was a better policy president than a communication president. Some of the policies, he did a lot of good. He wasn't a good salesman for those policies. I think part of that was because his staff was worried he was going to screw up every time he'd get behind a microphone. And we saw how badly he screwed up during the debate as a communicator. It wasn't just that he didn't put his name on the checks, on the $1,400 checks. That's the thing that he keeps lacerating himself for. I don't think that was the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem was he didn't have a regular, continual, ongoing conversation or relationship with the voters during his presidency, which made him seem like even more distant and impaired than he was. And so there was no way for him or his successor, Kamala Harris, as a candidate to clinch the deal. And that's what a lot of people, including me, are holding against him, that not getting out of the race after the 2022 elections handing over the keys to the White House to Kamala Harris in 2022. And he could have just resigned and said, I built the bridge. I'm a transitional president. Let Kamala Harris drive here for a while. And he didn't do that. And I think at some point he'll recognize that. He doesn't seem to have recognized it yet because he keeps saying he thinks he could have won. There's no way in the world he was going to win.
And also, I just don't, whether people think so or not, we'll never know, right? And it's not helpful to say comments like that because then people take it as a slight against Kamala, right? And like, I get it, when you've been in public office in this way, the way Biden has for the last 50 years, of course, it's going to be very, very hard for you to turn those keys over. But yeah, I think that I agree with, your analysis. I think I was talking to some folks recently and people are like, what's the one thing? And I would say, I think that there was a disconnect because even when Kamala became the nominee, even some of our team was like, okay, she's vice president. That's all I know about her, right? And she had 100 plus days, a little over 100 days to really kind of get that message out. And I think there's ways, and I think this is about every elected official, there's ways on the official side that people can actually continue to engage the constituents, to engage voters, even when you're not campaigning. It actually makes your campaign easier if you do that.
And look at AOC. AOC is a great example. She does it all the time on social media, constantly.
Yes. She'll be on Instagram Live talking about, some sort of policy while like baking cookies and, and breaking it down in a very easy to understand way. And I would like to see that more from candidates. And I think that's actually going to be necessary if people actually want to earn the voter support, who I think voters are becoming increasingly more cynical by the day. So they're going to need to go out of their way to build those relationships, especially as we come into, I hate to say it, the midterms.
Yeah, and I want to know who's going to be speaking up for the Democrats. I mean, I think Kamala Harris has a right to say that I'm the putative leader of the Democratic Party and to talk more than she has. She's been too quiet, as far as I'm concerned, after the election. I want to hear more from her. I want to hear more from other people who want to, you know, get that mantle. And we did hear from a texter, Carolyn Hartland, who said, I will absolutely, positively not, all caps, she's getting that from Trump, I think, watch the rapist, traitorous inauguration. So
that's how you really feel. Yeah,
seriously. But for your mental health, it may be good just not to watch it. I'm not going to watch it either. I don't recommend people. You know, I haven't watched cable TV for more than 15 minutes since the election. I just can't do it.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Can't do it.
And find something else to do. And again, it's MLK Day. So I really, everybody that is not watching the inauguration, I encourage folks to find a way to live out MLK's legacy and to do an act of service or to read and reflect and do that education. That's a much better use of time than watching that clown car circus.
Yeah, absolutely. Celebrate MLK Day on Monday rather than watch the inauguration. You're listening to Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang on the Todd Albaugh Show. And we'll be right back with Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers. Please hang on. It's going to be a fun conversation.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Albaugh Show. Todd's off today. He'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, co-hosting here with Angela Lang of Block. And we have a great guest here on the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Her name is Ann Sayers. She is in the cabinet of Governor Evers. She is the tourism secretary of the state of Wisconsin. And I wanted to say that if you ever need a deputy, Todd might be someone you'd hire as deputy because he goes all over Wisconsin all the time, promoting every nook and cranny of the state. Anyway, I'm not suggesting he wants to leave Civic Media and join your department, but he is doing a lot to stir up tourism in Wisconsin himself. And anyhow, Secretary Sayers, welcome to the program. It's great to see you and be with you.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I love it. Todd's an ambassador for Wisconsin tourism. That's perfect.
Totally an ambassador. He goes on the road. Sam, what is it? He goes on the road every other week practically.
Yeah, just about. He's always exploring some new place.
Yeah, it's fun to tune in and hear him. He's from Richland Center, so he talks about, you know, southwestern Wisconsin a lot too, but he's been to Amory. He's been all over the place. So tell us, first of all, how do you like your job?
Oh, it's such an honor to be in this position. And we always talk about, you know, to bring it back to your why. And what's really neat about being in tourism is there's really two whys. It's the one is about offering these opportunities to our residents or our out-of-state visitors and encouraging them to use their vacation days to do this thing for themselves. Go explore something new. You know, spend time with your family, be inspired by art, try a new food. It's so fun to be a part of encouraging that. But on the other side of it, it's all about the fact that doing that is good for our state. It brings revenue in and it makes it possible for decision makers to then decide what to do with it, build some roads, improve our schools, provide some healthcare, whatever you want to do with the revenue that tourism can help generate. So there's two really important reasons why this work is so important. It's so fulfilling. And our entire agency, which is small, by the way, but all of us are really motivated by that every day.
And you've been generating a lot of revenue, record-breaking tourism revenue, right? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, in 2019, we set a record, and we were going into 2020. We're going to host the Ryder Cup, and it was going to be, you know, but blah, blah, blah. Didn't go as we thought. But we really sprang back. We surged back faster in 21 than any of our neighbors. And then in 22, we broke a record for revenue, economic impact ever in the state of Wisconsin via tourism. And then we did it again in 2023. So tourism had two record-breaking back-to-back years, but so has outdoor recreation, which is a whole economy unto itself, and it's measured a little bit differently. But that one too, and we're proud of both, of course, but I don't think everyone knows that the Office of Outdoor Recreation sits within the Department of Tourism. So we're really trying to hold up both of these economies, and it's just great to see that people are responding to what Wisconsin has to offer and how we've been pitching it to them.
What are some of the biggest tourism attractions here in Wisconsin for people who come from out of state, for instance?
Yeah, it's there's so many answers to that question, but we follow the data. And one thing we always see is that outdoor recreation and events are at the top of the list of the reason that people come to Wisconsin. And we do both so, so well. And recently, we've also been adding these really large scale marquee events that Wisconsin didn't always get. So suddenly now we've hosted sort of the DNC, definitely the RNC. We had the Ryder Cup. We had the U.S. Senior Open. And now we have the NFL draft right around the corner. And this year, last year, I should say, we had Top Chef, which is kind of, that was a big win. 12 episodes, 75 minutes each, all in Wisconsin, showing off our culinary history. Definitely put Wisconsin in a different place in the national eye of a potential visitor.
And outdoor activities, that's hunting and fishing and hiking and camping mostly?
It is, but you know, in Wisconsin, it can also be rock climbing. It can be snowmobiling, ATVing, hunt fish. Surfing is a whole thing.
Really?
And birding, of course, Matt, which I know you care about.
Yeah, bird watching. You know, I think there's more upside to come from birding, though. I'm of two minds because, you know, us bird watchers, sometimes we don't like to broadcast how great the birding is in Wisconsin because we don't want half Illinois coming up here and scaring the birds away.
I have the exact same problem with everything. All of our, you know, well-kept secrets in tourism, you don't. What? Well-kept secrets? My job's to tell everyone to come look at all of this stuff, but I know what you're saying.
But I'm sorry, let me just jump in on birds a second, and then I'll turn it over to you, Angela, because the birding here is amazing. I can't, no. I mean,
there I love are it.
Hooping cranes in the summer at Horicon Marsh. There are golden eagles in the winter here in Wisconsin at Devil's Lake and over to on Highway 60 going west along the Wisconsin River. To Muscadet, they're golden eagles. People used to not know that there were golden eagles in Wisconsin in the wintertime. And so those are some of the incredible things. There are all sorts of great birds in the state. And yeah, we'd be overrun by tourists from Chicago and elsewhere if we really broadcast it loudly and clearly. Angela, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because there's so many great like attractions, whether it's like outside or inside, obviously, I am from Milwaukee, so not to put you on the spot, but what are some of your like favorite Milwaukee attractions, whether it's a festival or a restaurant or one of your favorite things to do in Milwaukee?
Oh my gosh. Okay. This is a fun question. Well, one thing that I am talking about a lot these days is the Harley-Davidson Museum, which sounds like, oh, if I'm not into motorcycles, maybe that's not my thing. It totally is. It's a real museum. Talking about how Harleys played a role in American history through some of the wars. It has one of Elvis's Harleys there. It has a Harley that washed up on the shore after the Fukushima accident, and it kind of shows what happened to that bike as it traveled across the ocean. It's surprisingly engaging. I just couldn't. And now I'm a little bit obsessed with Harleys, but I guess I'm not a little bit, I'm like a lot. And I think that's the whole point. It was the whole point of museum. So I really encourage folks. And what was really cool, I was there. A guy pulled up on his Harley from Kansas. He had come I almost thought, it's like, did somebody set this up? So just while I happen to be standing here, this guy rolls in on his license plate from Kansas Harley. And he's like, I'm making a pilgrimage here to the Harley Davidson Museum. This is so important to me. And of course, he's going to stay in a Milwaukee hotel. He's going to take in some Milwaukee culinary. He's probably going to take in some Milwaukee entertainment. And suddenly, you know, he becomes an ambassador for how amazing Milwaukee is.
I mean, what I'm hearing you say, Anne, is that you are going to get a Harley and we're going to see you at the next Harley Fest.
Definitely. This is on my vision board.
I love that. I mean, Harley Fest is great. And I live in the area, like off of Brady Street. And, you know, there's always a lot of people in the Facebook groups that are like, it's so loud. But like, honestly, like the Harley folks are so nice. I've known, I've seen them come in for so years. Nice. When my mom used to work at a hotel, she used to see them all the time. And she said that they were always, you know, the nicest people. And, you know, I think of that as like kind of one of the unique things that Milwaukee has. And I'm not a Harley person myself, but my friend and I, we went to Harley Fest a couple years ago because we wanted to see the Green Day concert and we had a blast and it was fun. And, you know, there's just so many things to do, whether it's like your thing or not. I think that's like the beautiful thing about Milwaukee and by extension, Wisconsin, like finding new things and then seeing like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. I learned a new thing that I didn't know about in my own hometown or in my own state.
Right. And they are great community players, like the Green Day thing. It just brought everybody together. It's this great uniter. But that's, you know, same goes for Summer Fest. Same goes for Chef Dan Jacobs, who, you know, has received all this notoriety for having been on Top Chef. But he made that all about his home. At every opportunity, he made that about, I want to tell my story of Milwaukee. It's so special. Same for Bronzeville and how that's inviting the entire community and the entire state and all of our out-of-state visitors in. There's this always this sense of community about how Milwaukee tourism attractions operate. So it's so Wisconsin.
And the Milwaukee Art Museum is another draw. I know my brother and sister-in-law from the Chicago area come up once a year and we meet at the art museum and then go out to a good restaurant. And it's an incredible, first of all, the architecture is just so stunning of the art museum there. Mm-hmm. And the collections are great. So yeah, there's just so much. I was talking with Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show months ago, and he was responding to Republicans who stereotype Milwaukee all the time and do scare tactics about Milwaukee. He said, you should come to Milwaukee. People come to Milwaukee all the time for Summerfest or watch the Bucks or watch the Brewers or go to restaurants or go to the art museums. I mean, it is a huge attraction, I think, for people, even, you know, snobs from Chicago who come up here.
I'm glad you named the art museum because that's one of those places where I don't want people to think, oh, I've been once and that's that.
Yes.
You've got to keep going. The exhibitions they keep bringing in are incredible, world class. They're always making updates. And I think they just doubled the size of the gift shop, which is museum gift shops are kind of my kryptonite. So love it. It's beautiful. More plans on the horizon. So definitely, if you haven't been there in a minute, get back.
Yeah, that's great. That's like a reminder for me because I'm like, I love the art museum. Sometimes it's just like good to go on just like a random day by yourself. I'm also like a fan of just like exploring the city on my own and be like, I'm going to take myself out to dinner or I'm going to take myself out to this museum. And I think that's like a perfect thing to do. And there's, like you said, there's always so much to do and to see all the time. And what I also appreciate is that a lot of our attractions, whether it's like museums or what have you, there's a lot of specials. So like it's affordable for families to go and there's various like deals and stuff too. I don't know if you want to be able to talk about some of those things about how tourism is able to be accessible even for the local folks.
Yeah, we're really proud of that in Wisconsin. We find that a lot of our visitors we're a drive market. So they're driving in from Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota. And part of the reason we can be so attractive to a family who wants to make lifelong memories but not break the bank is because we have all of these offerings. And one place we score really high in the eyes of a tourist is so much to see and do. So you can really pack in a lot. And some of that is just full-blown free, if not just, you know, very affordable from the unique places that you can stay, the kind of amazing culinary you can find at a great price point to, you know, outdoor recreation is often just free entry or some of these museums, children's museums and other things like that. We try to, you know, Wisconsin goes out of its way to make it really accessible.
Again, the state parks are great. I know Todd Alba had a whole segment on, you know, what's your favorite state park? And people were texting in and calling in You know, Wyalusing State Park, Devil's Lake State Park, Peninsula State Park, you name it. It's such an, you know, I've been in the state for 40 some years now, and it's still, I'm still going to a new state park. I went to Kohler Andre State Park just in the fall. It was an incredible place. And so it's amazing what we have to offer, and you're doing so much, Secretary Sayers, to promote this state, both for people in Wisconsin to enjoy it and for people out of state. I mean, you mentioned you're bringing in money. You didn't cite a figure. I saw a figure of $25 billion in 2023. That's a chunk of change.
It's a chunk of change. And our, you know, just for comparison, our state agency is $18 million. It's less than one half of 1% of the state's budget, holding up a $25 billion industry. And my favorite statistic is each household in Wisconsin would have to pay an additional $660 a year in order to maintain the level of government services that are maintained by the tourism revenue.
That's a nice return on investment. Great return on investment you're giving us.
And I was going to go back to what Angela said about wellness, like just kind of like taking a day and hanging out with you. You know, that's actually a really big emerging trend right now. And Wisconsin is kind of stepping into the wellness space. And I love that for us because, you know, I think we are kind of up against a perception of kind of being like loud, cheesy sports fans, and like that's not wrong, and we're really proud of it. But we also have made space for these quieter moments are just a place to recharge, and that has a lot to do with our arts and culture scene, and again back to just having, you know, two great lakes and the Mississippi River and more than 10,000 inland lakes and 50% of the state covered in forests. This is a great place to come and recharge.
Well, we're lucky to have you there at the Department of Tourism. Ann Sayers, Secretary of Tourism for Wisconsin, thanks so much for being our guest on the Todd Albaugh Show.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
So good to see you, Ann.
Take care.
And we'll be right back. Maybe we'll talk about the ERA and what Biden just did about that.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Albaugh Show. Todd's off today. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Matt Rothschild, your substitute teacher today. And my co-substitute teacher is Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. It was great to have Ann Sayers on, wasn't it, Angela?
I had no idea some of those statistics. Like, I, as a lovely, you know, participant of all of the things that they're doing, I had no idea, like, the scale, level, and numbers of impact. And I'm just over here just going to various things because I want to, but knowing that it's actually a big driver. So I think it's just encouraging for all the listeners of like, keep visiting the parks, keep visiting all these different things, especially in Milwaukee. Like, I know there can be sometimes some stereotypes. We are not big, bad, and scary. There's a lot of great things to do in Milwaukee and have a good time.
Yeah, I can't think of a better salesperson for the state of Wisconsin than Ann Sayers. So it's great to have her there.
I love seeing her travels too around like social media. She's posting pictures of like, I'm fishing with like the governor's team and other stuff. It's been so great to kind of watch her Wisconsin adventures too unfold.
Yeah, there she was in Spring Green and, you know, all over the place. I gave her a birding tip for a blue grosbeak that I've never seen, but was supposed to be over there in the Spring Green area. Anyway, we've got a couple texters. The Chuckster from Racine wants to know about the Equal Rights Amendment, and we'll get to that in a second. Eric from Tosa says he'll be honoring Dr. King on Monday. It's Dr. King Day on Monday, so I'm glad he'll be doing that. Self-care will be important, he says, as the arc toward justice is going to bend backward that day. That is a tough one because, of course, that's the big Martin Luther King line about the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice.
When is it bending back? I feel like we've been bending away from justice. And I was like, okay, you can bend back now. When does that start?
When's it coming back around? Yeah, it isn't my favorite Martin Luther King quote, I got to say, because there's so many ups and downs in history. I get what he was getting at. And you got to offer people, you know, that vision and that hope. But
yeah,
it is troublesome when you look at the last 10 years. You can look at the last 100 years, and there's been a lot of bouncing around. So Eric from Tulsa also says, what are the odds the incoming commander-in-chief brings it up? I guess that's Martin Luther King Day to brag about it. He might, you know, there's no bottom that this guy won't touch. So he can claim anything. But you can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We wanted to talk about what President Biden declared today, and that is that the ERA is ratified, he said. He believes the Equal Rights Amendment has met the requirements of ratification. And therefore is now part of the Constitution, the New York Times reports. But Biden declined to order the government to finalize the process by officially publishing it, which is curious. And evidently there'll be a bunch of lawsuits about this or not. There's a question about, you know, they finally got enough states to come across, but some states have already rescinded their approval of the ERA. And the ERA is a flashback for me because it's, you know, 1970s. I mean, I was in high school at that point and heard about the ERA and then Phyllis Schlafly opposing the ERA. So it's kind of a relic. And I saw on Facebook like a week ago, someone brought up the ERA and I didn't even know what that person was talking about. But I guess Biden did because he just went and pulled the trigger on this. What do you make of it, Angela?
I mean, I'm encouraged. I think, you know, when I was looking at some of it, I think the Times says, Biden says Equal Rights Amendment has passed, but does not force certification. So, you know, I think some folks initially are saying that it's a little more symbolic and that we all just, like everything in this country, just need to be prepared for whatever legal fight continues and whatever legal battles. And I think that's discouraging, but I think it does send a very strong, I think, reminder that there's going to be a lot of LGBT attacks, I think, and especially against like trans folks. And I think this just says that we need to be prepared and be ready to stand with our LGBT community too.
Definitely that. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, it's been 50 years and we still cannot declare as part of our Constitution that the equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex. That's the language of the ERA amendment. It's not that controversial, folks.
It's not. But yet here we are. We can never get anything passed. And I think also is, you know, thinking about, there's just so many, I think, marginalized folks right now that are going to be under attack. And I think it's just something that we all need to make sure that we are, you know, supporting, whether it's women, like I said, LGBT folks, because I think once they start to go for one community, they're going to go for another. Immigrants, you know, we've seen it in Milwaukee and ICE talking about trying to expand and build a processing center, but they want to build a fence around it so it looks a little suspicious. And, you know, I think a lot of times in these conversations, people are like, well, this doesn't have to do with me or I'm not directly impacted. But that doesn't mean that we still shouldn't show up for each other, because if it happens to one community and people, especially the Trump administration, can get away with taking away the rights of one community, the rest are going to continue as well. And, you know, it's with women. We've seen it. We've seen all the imagery and symbolism around things like The Handmaid's Tale. And is that where we're actually going? And I think all of these things are connected, and understanding the intersections. And I'm hoping that we all, you know, as folks that are part of pushing back and the resistance, are, you know, going from one fight to another collectively. And it's not just forcing folks that are directly impacted to be standing alone, fighting for their own rights, too.
Absolutely. We've got to show up for each other. There is a great group in Wisconsin called Fair Wisconsin that is defending LGBT rights. And the ACLU and other groups are doing it as well. League of Women Voters, a whole bunch of groups, including Bloc, are doing it. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone will join in those efforts. You're listening to the Todd Albaugh Show. We'll be right back with the new Poet Laureate of Wisconsin, Brenda Cardenas. Will be joining us right after the break on the Todd Albaugh Show, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.